Welcome to Forest North, a podcast from the Superior National Forest. I'm your host, Brett Ross. Join me as we talk with some of the unique people who live, work, and recreate on our national forest lands here in northern Minnesota. On this latest episode, I'm joined by wildlife biologist Dave Grossish from the Tofte Ranger District. He gives us the lowdown on our regional owl populations, their early spring breeding activity, habitat management, and the acoustic recording unit project, which allows us to share some of the actual calling from the various owl species typically found on the Superior National Forest. We've talked a lot on previous episodes about the relative lack of winter weather this season, and most recently the sure signs of early spring we've been seeing across the Northwoods. And true to form, as I'm recording this, I'm looking out the window at a good old-fashioned late March snowstorm. So the winter weather is not done with us yet this season on the forest. That being said, there's been a lot of deterioration of ice conditions on area lakes. We've been seeing more open water and, to say the least, very sketchy ice conditions that are getting sketchier with the heavy snow on top. So be aware of that. No ice is ever 100% safe. Of course, as we see more open water, it's hard for a lot of us to resist getting out for a paddle, but please keep in mind that water is incredibly cold and it can be life-threatening to suddenly end up in that water. So always wear a personal flotation device whenever you're on the water, but use extreme caution if you're on the water during this cold time of year. Again, please be safe out there and hopefully enjoy the late game comeback by winter. Forest North is created by the Ely Tourism Bureau in partnership with the USDA Forest Service, Superior National Forest. Find out more about the Superior National Forest at fs.usda.gov/superior. Remember to subscribe, share, and leave a review on your favorite listening platform. And you can email your comments, questions, or suggestions to tourism@ely.org. I'm Brett Ross. Welcome to Forest North. Joining me on this episode of Forest North, Dave Grossish, wildlife biologist with Superior National Forest on the Tofte Ranger District. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Brett.
Hey, thanks so much for being here. I really appreciate you joining me.
Oh, I'm super glad to have this conversation and talk about owls.
Yeah, so before we get into owls specifically, if you could give us a little bit of your story, your background, how you came to the position you're in right now.
Sure. So I did my undergraduate degree at the University of Wisconsin at Stevens Point, and I focused on wildlife management and biology. And then from there, I did a bunch of research jobs across the country and moved back to Minnesota in the mid-90s and started working at the Hawk Ridge Bird Observatory and worked for NRI, the Natural Resources Research Institute. And from there, I ended up going back to school. And got my graduate degree from the University of Minnesota in Duluth. And from that point, I thought I was going to go stay in research, but, you know, things change and I got really interested in doing more work with habitat management. So I was lucky enough to get a job on the Superior National Forest in 2007 and worked across the forest on several different districts, and now am back in Tofte, the Tofte District, and really love my job.
Excellent. It sounds very rewarding for someone who is into wildlife. I would imagine you get a lot of opportunity to experience the various wildlife we have here in the National Forest.
Yeah, we're very fortunate, I think, on the Superior and in northeastern Minnesota, to have such a diverse habitat, which means that we have a huge diversity of species on the forest, and particular birds. The northeastern Minnesota is one of the the highest bird diversities of anywhere in North America. So we're very, very lucky in this area to have such a great wealth of wildlife.
That's pretty incredible. Now, was your focus always specifically on birds, or did you come to that once you started working on the forest, or how did that come to be?
Well, I probably have been a bird nerd most of my life. I was, even as a young child, I was interested in birds. And I focused on birds in college and outside of that. You know, outside of college, I did a lot of bird research work, like I mentioned. But, you know, I also was fortunate enough to work on Canada lynx with the Natural Resources Research Institute when lynx got listed.
So let's talk about owl monitoring. Give us an overview of what owl monitoring actually is and why it's an important part of your job.
Sure. I guess I'll start with, you know, why it's important first. You know, owl monitoring, I mean, there's a number of reasons why it's important to monitor owls. And just to share a couple of those reasons. One is, you know, owls are considered top predators in the food chain, which makes them really good indicators of environmental health. Mm-hmm. You know, owls are top predators. Often can be influenced by contaminants in the environment or influenced by habitat loss. And, you know, for owls, you know, there are some species that have very specific habitat requirements, especially those that may nest in like cavities, you know, because those cavity trees typically are large diameter trees. And if we don't have any large diameter trees, we're not going to have those types of cavities available for nesting. You know, another reason, and this is more related to the Forest Service, is that, you know, we are mandated to try and maintain viable populations of species of interest or species of concern. And on the forest, we have two owl species that we would consider regional forester-sensitive species, and that is the boreal owl and the great gray owl. And the reasons why those two species kind of rise to the top is that, you know, both of those species are kind of at the southern edge of their breeding range, and oftentimes critters that are found at the southern fringes of their range are the ones that get influenced the most by habitat loss or habitat change or climate change. You know, they also, like I said, they have specific habitat requirements. For both species, lowland conifer complexes, like large complexes of lowland conifer, are important for those species. And also, as I mentioned, climate change can be a big driver. And because they're at their southern edge and they're more of a northern species, that is something that will influence them. So that kind of gets to, you know, a few reasons why we might monitor. Also, you know, owls, because they're nocturnal and they breed pretty early in the season, they're poorly monitored by other traditional methods like the breeding bird survey, which is really kind of doing monitoring of birds in the summertime. And Christmas bird counts, you know, owls just aren't as active vocalizing as much during that Christmas bird count timeframe. Mm. So actually doing specific surveys looking for owls during the breeding season is what we need to do to really understand owl populations.
And so we are basically in the breeding season right now. Is this the typical breeding season for owls, for most owls?
Yeah. I mean, yes, that's, yep. I mean, there are nine owl species that have been documented on the Superior National Forest. Seven of those species breed here. And those species are great horned owl, barred owl, northern saw-whet owl, long-eared owl, boreal owl, great gray owl, and northern hawk owl. You know, there are other owl species that nest in the state, such as eastern screech owl and short-eared owl. And, you know, we have detected those species on the forest, but their habitat is such that they don't really breed in northeastern Minnesota. So, yes, I mean, the breeding season is now, typically now. And it does change, it varies a little depending on the species. Some species are earlier and some species are a little later. Some of those early species are like great horn, and some of those later species are like barred owl. So that's why we monitor over a span of starting in early March and we go to mid-April. And we have three different survey windows or periods, and that we do some monitoring just so we can kind of capture that variation and when the birds are, you know, when their peak calling time frame is for those species.
Let's talk about the process for monitoring owls. Is it mainly an auditory process where you're listening for the calls, or what sort of things are involved in the monitoring process?
Typically, we are listening for owls, and because there's, you know, not that many species, and also given the time of year that they are more active in calling, you know, you don't have to go out there and try and pick through, you know, 20 different species that are might be calling or singing like you would in the summertime. So it's actually relatively easy to learn those calls and to pick them out. So yeah, we drive, we usually are driving down roads. We have routes that are identified across the forest. We also partner with the DNR and the Friends of Saxon Bog, and they're doing a few routes, and there's some routes in north central Minnesota and some routes in the Saxon Bog. But typically most of our routes are on the forest. And how we identified those routes is based on a lot of research that had been done and monitoring that had been done in the past by folks like Steve Wilson and Bill Lane, who started monitoring owls in northeastern Minnesota back in the 80s.
If we could go back to the Saxon Bog, can you give us a kind of an overview of what it is about that area? I know a lot of people, that's a destination for people to hopefully experience owls. What is it about that region that makes it such a hub for owls?
Well, you know, I think in part it's because there's a real mix of habitat types there. There's a lot of large lowland bog complexes in that area, interspersed with a number of agricultural fields and other types of forested habitat. And those owls, a lot of the owls, especially the ones that people go to the bog to see, there's a few boreal specialties such as northern hawk owl and great gray owl that occur in the bog. Those species are really connected with small mammals, in particular voles. And, you know, those vole species, a lot of them do well in those kinds of habitats, agricultural fields or lowland and other forests. So you can, you know, it's a food availability thing for owls, and also just that proximity of lowland conifer that is really good for those species.
Okay. When we spoke offline, you shared some audio with me, some specific calls. And as we talk more specifically about the different owl species, we'll try and share some of the calls so people can have that audio that relates to the specific owls. You also mentioned acoustic recording unit project. Tell us about that, if you would.
So we call them ARUs, the acoustic recording units, as kind of a, you know, it's a new thing that is really taken off in the bird monitoring world. You know, bioacoustics is kind of an emerging field within wildlife research, and, you know, putting these units out allows us to survey for owls over an entire night and for weeks on end, which is different than when we're doing these driving surveys, which is just a single point in time, and we listen for 5 minutes, and so that's all you have during those three different periods. So having this ability to record owl calling behavior throughout an evening can tell us a lot about their calling activity. And we have partnered with the Fond du Lac Tribal and Community College, the Natural Resources Research Institute, and Friends of Saxon Bog to really get this project up and running and become a larger scale project. You know, we started in 2020, just kind of having a few units out there. And then by last year, we had almost 40 units out. And that collects a lot of data about the calling activity of owls. Which really sheds a lot of light on when owls are calling most frequently and we can learn a lot more about what kind of weather influences there may be on calling activity. Moon phase is something that could be a factor. So understanding when owls are calling will really help us to do those kinds of driving surveys so that we're out there at the best times to monitor owls, so that we have the best chance, the highest chance to detect those owls. It's a lot more costly to put a lot of ARUs out. They cost a lot of money, and you know, you have to maintain them by changing batteries and pulling data cards. So it's a lot of time to invest in that. So if we can learn more about their calling activity and be more mindful about when to do our driving surveys, we can probably cover a lot more ground and get a lot more monitored through people.
Can you talk a little bit about the specific sorts of things that you've learned from the collection of this data?
Yeah, like I said, I mean, we're early in the ARU project. You know, 2023 was the first year we really had a lot of data. You know, we have started to kind of take a closer look at some of those routes. And we did have a route that we analyzed, and you could see that for great gray owls, that their calling activity was usually the highest calling activity was in the first couple hours after dusk and the last couple hours before dawn. And also time of year, we did find that it looks like they're calling more frequently earlier in the survey period rather than later. So we're getting many more detections in kind of that early to mid-March timeframe rather than kind of that early to mid-April timeframe.
Can you speak to what the specific reasons are for their calls? Is it primarily for mating? Is it territorial? A combination of a number of things?
Yeah, I mean, in part, it's a combination of things. One, you know, they're calling to find a mate, and that's part of their courtship process is calling. And the other reason that they may call is also for defending their territories. Now, owls, once they get mated, you know, they might have a large territory, but they really only are defending the area right around their nest. So they're actually, their calling activity level probably tapers off a bit once they're kind of in that nesting period. And they're calling much more frequently in that courtship period. And the courtship period can actually last quite a long time for some species. It can be up to 3 months for a species like boreal owl. That's probably more an exception rather than the rule, but it can happen that they have an extended. And even for species like great horned owl, they may actually stay within their territory the entire year. Great horned owls can be monogamous, and so you may have pairs that stay together for a while. Typically, owls are not, you know, they're monogamous within one season, but they will typically have different mates every year. But like I said, great horned owls are a species that may be on their territory the entire year.
Okay. If you could talk about habitat management. So what are the specific considerations for helping to manage habitat for owls?
So, you know, for us on the forest, you know, we have some guidelines, some standards and guidelines that we incorporate into habitat management for boreal and great gray owls. Some of that is just a matter of, you know, deferring any kind of habitat management that we might do, which could include harvesting. We may choose not to harvest certain areas, such as like lowland stands that could be important roosting areas for species like boreal owl. We also may institute a timing restriction of when we can do some kind of habitat management within areas where birds may be nesting. So if we know of a nest, you know, we often would not do any kind of habitat management during the breeding season. And typically that runs from, you know, March to August. So we'd stay out of those areas so we don't create a large disturbance. So it's really a matter of kind of looking at a big picture of the habitat and areas that, you know, where these owls will nest, and think about habitat configurations. And harvesting can be beneficial for owls. You know, young forests, often the small mammal numbers increase once you have that young forest. And because a lot of these owls are feeding on small mammals, having those kind of increases in small mammals provides them with more food to have more babies. And that's the name of the game for owls, right? More babies are better.
Right.
You know, the big thing for us is understanding where owls are. And if we know that, then we can be more mindful about how we manage habitats or forests around those areas where owls are more typically going to be found. Some owl species are much more of a generalist, such as great horned owls, and other species are very more habitat specific, as I mentioned earlier, boreal and great gray. So yeah, being more mindful about where we harvest and how we harvest can really help owl populations. The other thing to consider that I haven't shared yet is that for owls that are cavity nesters, in particular northern saw-whet owl and boreal owl, they are secondary cavity nesters. And what that means is that they're not the species that creates the cavity. It's the woodpeckers that are really creating the cavities. And so woodpeckers are considered a keystone species. They're very important for a number of species, not just birds, but also mammals that need those kinds of cavities to either roost in or nest in. So it's really important to understand that woodpeckers are a part of this picture as well. It's not just about the owls.
I mentioned earlier that you shared some of the calls. I'm wondering if you could, we can share the call, and then if you could give us a little overview of what owl that call comes from, the physical attributes and the habitat attributes, the food, things like that, about the specific owls in our region.
So great horned owls. They're an early breeder. They're one of the first owls to be heard in the breeding season. In fact, down in the this is so tangential, but you know, down in the cities, great horned owls can be sitting on eggs by in January.
Wow!
Yeah, the great horned owls nest in stick nests that are built by other species. So all owl species, none of them create their own nest. All of them are either occupying an old stick nest or a cavity that has been created. It could be a natural cavity or created by a woodpecker. And then some owl species nest in the tops of broken off trees. But great horned owls typically nest in an old stick nest built by other raptors or by corvids. And their clutch size, you know, it can range, but usually you're thinking it's right around 2 to 5 eggs. And once, and this is different for owls, you know, once they start laying an egg, because they'll lay an egg, it may take a couple days for the egg to develop and be laid. So there could be a day or several days in between laying eggs. But once they start laying the first egg, they start incubating. So when they hatch, there's asynchronous hatching, meaning that the kids are hatching at different time frames. So they develop differently. You have some kids that are older and some kids that are younger in a nest. The adaptation for that for owls, I think, is really a matter of food. So, you know, if they lay 6 eggs or 5 eggs or whatever, you know, and there's a lot of food, it's very likely that all of the chicks will fledge. But if there's kind of the food shortage, then in some cases, the younger nestlings may actually turn into food or may just die. So there's some kind of adaptation there in terms of, I don't know, how much food is available for species.
Sure.
The next species is northern hawk owl. The vocalization is just kind of a mid-ranged trill. They're not very loud. And hawk owls are an interesting bird because they, for an owl anyways, they are much more diurnal than some of the other owls. They're also shaped differently than some of the other owls. Hawk owls are more falcon-like, and like I said, they're more diurnal, so that when they call is more in that dawn-dusk time frame, you know, maybe even before it's getting dark. Hawk owls nest in cavities and in broken-off treetops, typically. That is a species that is also kind of more of a northern species, and they erupt into Minnesota, typically, and the eruptions are basically mostly caused by small mammal cycles. So a lot of like voles cycle every 3 to 5 years in their population levels. So some years there's lots of them and some years there's not very many of them. And hawk owls are pretty nomadic, meaning they move around a lot to find those areas where there's high food availability. And so some years when they erupt into Minnesota, they're erupting into Minnesota because there's shortages of food in other northern regions of their breeding range. And if they erupt into Minnesota when there's a high level of food here, they'll stay and nest. So they're a really interesting bird. Barred owls are they're a classic, you know, it's really easy for people to identify barred owls because you can kind of put words to their vocalization. A lot of people say that barred owls are kind of saying, who cooks for you? Who cooks for you all?
Right.
So that one is probably one that a lot of people recognize. Barred owls are a cavity nester, and they're a relatively larger owl, so they require a larger cavity, which means they need larger diameter trees. They're a resident owl. So like great horn, they stay here year-round, and they can stay within their territories year round. They're an interesting owl in that you can even actually hear them even calling during the summertime, mm-hmm. Even after the kids have fledged. So that's kind of interesting that, you know, for an owl to do that. But it's not super unusual for people to hear barred owls calling in the summertime.
I will say that was one just last summer. I was in an area of the National Forest and barred owls going back and forth for seemed like the entire time we were out on a hike. It seemed like the whole area of the forest we were in just felt full of them. And it was middle of the day, middle of the summer. So it seems like that's fairly unique to the barred owl.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they're a little different in terms of they call it caterwauling, where they're kind of talking back and forth to each other, which is different. You don't hear of that with a lot of the other owl species. They're pretty cool. Great gray owl, they have a single note that they'll repeat, but it's kind of a much deeper call than compared to the other owl species. That is a species that typically nests in other stick nests. For us on the forest, we often find great grays nesting in old goshawk nests. So they need a relatively large size stick nest to nest in. Once again, they're more of a northern species, so they're pretty nomadic in terms of their breeding, following kind of those prey cycles, moving around. So one year you can find them, and another year you may not find them at all. In Minnesota, we typically find great grays every year, where hawk owls you know, there may be some years we don't detect any hawk owls, but great grays are seem to be more common to find nesting in the state in every year.
It seems like there's some years where you see a real abundance of great grays, and then other years you maybe don't see quite as many, and that is typically mm-hmm. driven by food.
Yep, that's kind of getting back to that eruptive behavior mm-hmm. That hawk owls also exhibit. Two theories behind that are one, that they're erupting because there's a prey shortage. The other reason that some of these northern species erupt is it could be severe winter weather, and they could have had really high reproduction. So some years when great gray owls erupt into Minnesota, the age structure of those birds can vary. So some years you see a lot of young birds erupting into the state, which probably is caused by just they had really high reproduction. There's not as much food. Young birds are, you know, more challenged at finding food, and they're not as good, so they'll move south. And other years you see a real mix of that age structure, or it can be dominated by adults. So the most notable eruption, and maybe people even remember this, is from 2004 and 5, that winter of 2004-05, when, you know, thousands of great gray owls were found in this state in the wintertime. That far exceeds a normal eruption, which may be on the order of, you know, a few hundred birds. And that the reason for that large scale eruption is was really thought that, you know, there was a wide scale prey shortage. In most years when you have eruptions, you have kind of regional prey shortages. So maybe one area in Ontario or Manitoba had a prey shortage, and so those birds would erupt. And so you get a much smaller group of birds. But in that 2004-05 eruption, it was thought that it was a wide-scale prey shortage.
I remember that year really well. And this is a bit of a tangent, but perhaps you can illuminate this a little bit. That year, I was out with my camera specifically looking for great grays, and I happened to see a lot of them. And one day, I had stopped along the Fernberg Trail and was photographing this great gray in a tree. And as I was photographing, it flew directly towards me. I just kept snapping away to the point where it totally filled the frame of the shot and flew right over my head to the point where I could feel the wind from its wings on my face. And I was stunned. I thought it was coming for my head. And then I also noticed that same day a couple of times where they would swoop down and do the same thing towards the windshield of cars. Oh. Do you have some idea as to why that would be?
You know, the case for the bird flying at your head or at you in particular, that could be a function that, you know, these owls are, you know, they're northern birds, and they, you know, they're just not as many people in the area that they often occur. And so they often don't really get too shy with people. So it may have seen a small mammal or something behind you and just was like so focused on that it didn't really think too much about you being in the way. But I will say that, you know, hunters, you know, oftentimes I've heard stories about, and this has actually happened to me too, sitting in a tree stand and they've had an owl fly right at their head. And there it seems like they're focused really on a person's eyes. So maybe they can see your eyes and they're just curious, you know, because typically when you're sitting in a tree stand or something, you're in camouflage or whatever. And so they can see your eyes, and that, I don't know if they're curious or what. The other thing about flying into, you know, a window kind of deal, you know, you hear about this in other birds, and it's usually during the breeding season that they can see their reflection. Mm-hmm. And so they're kind of curious, and actually think it's, an intruder, or it's another, they actually think that it's another male, you know, in their territory. So I don't know, maybe they could see a reflection in the car window or something, and they were curious about it being another owl. I'm not sure. That's kind of interesting. long-eared owl, they have a single note, but it's not as low in pitch as the great gray owl. It's closer in pitch to a horned owl, but like I said, there's kind of a pattern to a horned owl's call, where a long-eared owl is kind of a single note that they'll repeat. Long-eared owls typically nest in old stick nests. They aren't super common in northeastern Minnesota. They're much more common out in northwestern Minnesota. So they seem to like kind of those much more open landscapes. And a lot of times they'll nest in groves of trees or pockets of trees where there's a stick nest. Whereas a species like northern sow owl, you know, they're much more connected to forested environment, or barred owls that are strictly mostly found in forested environments. Long-eared owls are a migratory species, so they annually migrate to areas. And, you know, if they're nesting up in kind of northern Minnesota, some may winter in southern Minnesota, or they may go further south than that. But yeah, they're a kind of a true migratory species, whereas a lot of the other owls are either eruptive or kind of a resident species. Boreal owls, their vocalization is a series of notes that they kind of repeat rapidly. Their pitch is a little higher pitched than some of the other owl species, but they, like I said, they'll do a series of calls. It's not necessarily a trill, but, you know, it's a rapid repeat of calls. And then there's a break, and then they'll do it again, and a break, and do it again. So pretty relatively easy to identify. And like I said, they're not high pitched. None of the owl species are high pitched compared to like warblers, but they're higher pitched than, say, a great gray owl. Boreal owls, as I mentioned earlier, are cavity nesters. They're also a northern owl, so they're eruptive in nature. It's a species that we feel has declined quite a lot in Minnesota compared to the years when surveys were done in the 80s and 90s. Reasons for that are complicated and not really well understood. We're seeing declines of boreal owls in several Canadian provinces, which is where they're more abundant. So there's something going on with boreal owl numbers. Climate change is definitely a possibility. But because they do require larger diameter trees that have cavities in them, there's been an increase in forest fires in Canada, and we're seeing that likely caused by climate change. So it's possible, you know, some of their habitat has changed enough that we're seeing some effects from that. But it's very complicated and difficult to understand what's going on with boreal owls. The last one is the northern saw-whet owl. This is a really pretty common owl in Minnesota. They are incessant singers or callers, just a repeat of a single note, and they'll just repeat it fairly rapidly, and they can go on and on and on and on. And people will say they hear them from inside the house. Mm-hmm. They're our smallest owl. They're only probably about 6 inches tall. They, once again, are a cavity nester, and that owl is migratory, but it's also nomadic. So it's a little tricky. They do move around and follow food, prey cycles, but they do migrate every year through Minnesota and come back. So, and they're, once again, they're wintering kind of like long-eared owls. They may go into southern Minnesota. They may go as far south as, say, Tennessee. So they can go quite a ways south. But a lot of times it varies depending on the winter conditions. And this winter, obviously, was kind of a lack of a winter. Mm-hmm. And it's very likely that there were northern sow-whet owls wintering in northern Minnesota this year.
Wow. Well, that is a lot of information about some of our more fascinating residents on the National Forest here.
Yeah. There's a lot there. And like I said, I can go down rabbit holes and I just probably taking up way more of your time than wanted. But
not at all. I really appreciate all your time. And I would welcome you, Dave, if you do have some links that you'd like to share with the audience, we can put them in the show notes. And if you have any links to some of the studies or any other information you think might be valuable to share with listeners.
Let me look into that more. Yeah. I'll see what I can find. I mean, we don't have like a specific link on the forest for owls, but we do have, there's a site on the Forest Service website that's related to wildlife and, you know, we do post stuff on there every now and again.
Okay. Excellent. Well, Dave, thanks so much again for your time. It's just really fascinating to get this in-depth view of the owls in our region, a really key part of our ecosystem here, especially when you consider, I would assume, one of the main reasons we don't have rivers of small rodents flowing through our national forest here is the owls that keep those populations in check.
Yeah, that's probably true. Nobody wants a lot of mice in their house in the fall, you know? Right. So having these owls around is a good thing.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for all the work you do. It's been a great opportunity to learn about owls today. Dave Grossish is a wildlife biologist with the Superior National Forest in the Tofte Ranger District. Dave, thanks so much for joining us on Forest North.
Yeah, you're welcome. I really appreciate it. Thanks for the time.
All right, my pleasure. Thanks so much for listening to Forest North, and much gratitude to Dave Grossish for sharing his owl expertise with us this week. Forest North is created by the Ely Tourism Bureau in partnership with the USDA Forest Service Superior National Forest. Find out more about the Superior National Forest at fs.usda.gov/superior. Follow the Ely Tourism Bureau on social media at visitelymn, at ely.org, and email your questions or comments to tourism@ely.org. Thanks again for listening. I'm Brett Ross. Join me next time on Forest North.